Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Council of Elrond, a Lord of the Rings podcast. On today's episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about the Dead Marshes, the horrible swamplands on the border of Mordor, which we see in the Two Towers movie. Frodo, Sam, and Gollum struggle to find their way through this wetland of death and mystery. We also get a glimpse of dead bodies and ghostly ghouls in the water, so on today's show, we're going to take a look at what was actually going on and give you some insights into this strange land. As always, we would love to hear your thoughts on any and everything discussed in today's episode, so please get in touch on all social media platforms. And as always, thank you so much to anyone who sponsors us by donating the price of a cup of coffee, and if you'd like to do so, you can find the link in the podcast info section. And now, on with today's episode.
Festering, stinking marshlands as far as the eye can see.
That is our road.
So, welcome to the show, everybody. And as I said in the intro, today we're looking at the Dead Marshes, which we see in Peter Jackson's adaptation of The Lord of the Rings quite a lot. So, Dave, let's kick it off straight away with an easy question. So, just if people haven't seen the movies, which is, have they been living under a rock?
Or, scandalous.
If people can't remember the movies very well, can you just quickly explain what the Dead Marshes are?
So it is in the second movie, I believe, The Two Towers, when Frodo and Sam and Sméagol are going on their travels and they get to a swampy place and basically Frodo steps in the swamp and Sméagol's like, get out of the water or whatever. And he tells him not to follow the lights.
Don't follow the lights.
And as they're walking around, they see lots of dead faces. Faces in the water. So there was a great battle long ago, but that's all that we're told from Sméagol, I believe. It's a scary place.
It is indeed a very scary place. And I think just general advice for people in the real world is swamps, marshlands, dangerous places. Don't go wandering out there, especially if there's some weird kind of ghostly lights just floating around the place. Don't follow the lights. So that's,
Don't eat the yellow snow.
Do not, exactly. Plenty of fantastic advice here on the Melonheads podcast today.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, exactly. We were also told by Gollum, as Dave said, that there was a battle there long ago, but we aren't given any other information. And so hopefully today I'll be able to give you a little bit more insight into actually what happened in the past. But first of all, yes, what are the dead marshes? Well, they're just dangerous wetlands on the border of Mordor, and they're a vast area where each step you take could be your last. Travelers avoid these areas and these marshes, and it's a very unknown and a very unexplored area. So nobody traveled here unless they were in dire need. So it was like shrouded in mystery and that kind of thing. And it often had a terrible mist as well, like hanging above the water, which caused a serious like lack of visibility and things like that. So also the swamp smelled as you would expect any regular swamp to smell, but also with the addition of thousands of years of storing dead bodies, it gave it a pretty horrendous stench. So, all of these factors, of course, led to mystery and legends being created. And so people making up little ghost stories and scaring the children and things like that about don't go to the Dead Marshes. So kind of a spooky little area. Also, characters in the book often comment on the smell and the strange air in this area that makes them dizzy. But let's look at some of the history and where do they get their name? Why are they called the Dead Marshes? And also our original question of what Gollum meant when he said there was a big battle here long ago. So I know, Dave, you said that he doesn't really give any more information. Do you have any guesses at what battle could have been the battle that Gollum was referencing?
Yeah, like I can't remember if I ever heard or not, or does it say in the books? I'm sure it does, but I always assumed, even from looking at the bodies in the water, it looks like there's an elf there with that kind of Noldor armor or that that high elven armor or whatever. And I always assumed it's from the Battle of the Last Alliance or the War of the Last Alliance from the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring. But like
very good.
It is
very good.
So yeah, I'd be correct, would I?
You would be correct. Yes, yeah. I feel like you want to keep going, so I don't want to break your flow. But I just
I've always kind of. Do you know the way when you're watching Lord of the Rings and you kind of have a thought and you're like, oh yeah, wonder what that's about, and then you kind of forget about it because you're blown away by the next scene, of course.
Yeah, I think we've said that before in other episodes where you have these like loads of like, just I wonder what that is. I'm going to look into that, but then at the end of the movie, you're just like,
you never do.
So many good things I've just witnessed, and then you just need to go and cry into a pillow.
Yeah. I think it's just because doesn't Sméagol say something like long ago, or men and elves had a great battle?
And oxes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
all dead, all rotten.
Yeah.
Men and elves and oxes.
Yeah, so there you go. No, yeah, but like that would hint to the Battle of the Last Alliance. So
very good. Yes. Well, as my esteemed colleague has just mentioned, it is the War of the Last Alliance. And now, however, the War of the Last Alliance was a really long time. It was actually 12 years. It was a 12-year war going on. But this battle that we see was called the Battle of Daggerlad. And it's not really mentioned, I don't believe, at any time in the movie. So I don't expect that to ring a bell. But that is the name of that that one individual battle. So, Of course, we know that wars can last for years, but we have lots of then famous individual battles. Now, this was the battle that we see depicted at the beginning of the Fellowship movie, where Sauron is defeated by men and elves. And this battle lasted for the battle itself lasted for months. And in the end, many of the dead were buried outside the area of the marshes. Remember, the marshes are on the border of Mordor. So over time, then the wetlands area grew and expanded, and they covered where this old battlefield had been and covered the graves of the fallen. And these were all swallowed up by the marsh, kind of adding to its already considerable death count that the marsh held.
Dead marshes. Yes, that is the name.
So let's just look at that battle for a moment. So who was involved in that battle, Dave? You've already said men and elves and orcs, but just let our listeners know.
Who, as in persons?
As in, no, well, maybe if you know any people that were involved, but also it's called the War of the Last Alliance. Why was it called the War of the Last Alliance?
I thought you were looking for like Isildur, Elendil.
Yeah. Well, you can tell me that as well, but yeah, okay. Why are they called the Last Alliance, I suppose?
Put me on the spot here. Because I'm guessing that Sauron had pretty much taken over, he had pretty much taken over a lot of Middle Earth, and there was only men and elves. Well, there was obviously dwarves, but men and elves were the last ones that stood up for the free peoples of Middle Earth, and this was like their last hurrah to try and defeat Sauron.
Yeah, kind of. Yes, it was like one of their last kind of big opportunities where they were like, okay, we're going to like pool all of our resources. We're all going to come together, all the men, all the elves. And remember as well, men and elves, that's not just two tribes. It's think of like if you say men in the earth, you're talking about gay people. You know, you could like, we're in Ireland and I'm like, oh, I don't consider myself part of the same group as lads that are 20 minutes up the road. So,
yeah.
I mean, there was lots and lots of individual groups there as well. Also the elves, you had the high elves, you had the Sindar elves, you had the wood elves, you had loads of different elves. So they all kind of came together, and also dwarves were involved as well. We don't hear too much about them, but they were definitely involved a little bit, especially maybe not in that exact battle, but definitely in the general war of the Last Alliance. They were involved as well. I believe Durin the Fourth was king at the time of the elves, of the dwarves, and he sent some troops out to join the War of the Last Alliance. But anyway, let's go on. So yes, you named Isildur there, for example, Dave. So he was one of the main dudes. Who was Isildur's dad?
Elendil.
Elendil. And who was he? He was the High King. He was the High King, and he was the dude representing the men, basically. So he got all the men together. He's kind of like your man, the King Beyond the Wall. Game of Thrones. He like got all these like clans and groups, brought them all together, and he was like, okay, I'm going to be the king of all these guys. And then, do you know the name of the Elven King by any chance? It begins with a G.
All right, Gil-galad.
Correct. Very, very good. So Gil-galad. Yeah, I'm sure.
I didn't know he was. Well, yeah, king. I just wasn't sure. I knew, what's his name? Elrond and Gil-galad were both there at the battle, so...
They were both there. They were buddies. Exactly, yeah. So it was like Cir Dan, and there was other famous elves that were there as well. But Gil-galad was the high king of the elves. And as I said, the elves, they were kind of split up into different groups. And also there was the wood elves, both made up of Lothlorien and Mirkwood. So those are the two famous woods that we know from Lord of the Rings.
Thranduil, did he make an appearance?
Actually, Thranduil's dad, his name was Orifer. He was the king. And he actually was the king of both of these tribes. Well, they both had individual kings, but he kind of was the main king of the two woodland elves groups. So he kind of led them, but they were also underneath Gil-galad. Gil-galad was ahead of them. However, Orifer, Thranduil's dad, Legolas's grandfather, was probably more similar to Thranduil than to Legolas. And he was very proud. And he basically didn't want to follow Gil-galad's orders. And so the wood elves from Lothlorien and Mirkwood, they attacked Mordor before Gil-galad gave the order. And a fight ensued outside the Black Gate. Now, many of the elves perished, including King Orifer himself. So again, that's Legolas's granddad. And eventually, his entire army of wood elves were driven back into the Dead Marshes, where half of their total forces died. And again, just to remind you that those people that died, they were buried just outside of this marshland. So the marshland already existed, but they were buried outside it. But over time, that marshland grew and grew and just kind of swallowed up all these graves as well. So this was the battle that gave the Dead Marshes its name then, because so many people died and so many people were kind of pushed into this marshland, and people died there from their wounds. And some people just got kind of drowned in the marshes as well. Ooh. And as I said, this is the battle that gave the Dead Marshes its name, but it also wasn't yet finished taking souls. So it took many more along the way, and we will hear about those as well.
Sam, what else?
Now, remember, this battle lasted for months, but it was part of a greater war known as the War of the Last Alliance, which we said lasted for a huge 12 years. And this final battle was not a quick affair at all. So it went on for a long time. It went on for months and months. And while I was looking into this, I just found a really cool description that somebody wrote online. I believe it was written on maybe Quora or on Reddit. I can't remember where I found it, but I have the guy's name. It was written by a guy called Fraser McWilliams. And he wrote a little like an excerpt on the Battle of Daggerlad, and it sounded kind of poetic, so I thought I'd like to just read it for you here now. This months-long battle saw the armies of most of Arda locked in furious combat as the forces of Gil-galad and Elendil cut their way through line after line of orcs and trolls and wicked men. The battle lasted for an incredibly long time. Attack, reorder, maneuver, strike, again. The casualties were enormous. When you think of this battle, don't think of a decisive one-day engagement like that of the Pelennor Fields. Think of a brutal, months-long slog like the Somme in World War I, where the battle lasted 140 days and had well over a million casualties. This is what the Battle of Daggerlad was like. Only without trenches, it saw a steady advance over a vast plain. Fight, win, advance. Fight, lose, retreat. Advance slowly over the corpses of yesterday's defeat. Again, again, orcs, men, dwarves, elves, everyone, corpses, piles of corpses, miles of corpses, the ground churned into mud by the blood spilled there, your friends lost in the morass, never to be seen again, sunk in the mud, mud, blood, death.
Wow.
That's cool, isn't it?
That was cool. That was intense. I liked the... In fact, he's obviously from London if he's using blood a lot, is he? All right, blood. I think definitely the word morass was a nice inclusion there. More ass. It's reminded me of. But yeah, when you hear that, like, especially if you just see the movies, everything, I know the movies are like, what, PG or 12s, and everything's quite smooth, and even the deaths, there's not that much blood, and it's also kind of poetic and majestical the way everyone is killed and dies and whatever. But it really sounds awful in that description. There is proper, like they mentioned the Somme, so it's like It's like World One or World War One, kind of gritty blood, mud, everything. Yeah. It's just awful, and you don't really associate that too much with Lord of the Rings. Even the way Tolkien writes things a lot, he doesn't focus that much on the actual killing and stuff. It'll just be like, oh, that field is beautiful, the tree is tall, and then Aragorn died, and that's the end of it. He's got to passes over, but
they don't really go into too much detail, I suppose, about, like, you know, the horrors of war. But actually, just the other day, I watched the movie Hacksaw Ridge. I'm not sure if you've seen it.
Brilliant movie.
And yeah, a fantastic movie. But again, that's a movie that really gives you a glimpse into the horrors of war. And I mean, so this battle, I think I liked that description of it. They're just talking about, like, you know, you wake up one day, you have a battle, you win and you advance, but the next day you have a loss and you need to retreat again. And then you need to make your way back again over the corpses of what were there before. So it's just really, really, it's a slog, and it's just so, you know, horrible. It's a horrible situation. So I thought that was cool to just have a little look at that. But that was the, as I said, the Battle of Daggerlad, more famously known as the Last Alliance Battle. Mm. Anyway, that, as I said as well, that was not the end of the body count in the Dead Marshes. So I want to look at another battle, which happened about 2,000 years later, after the War of the Last Alliance, when Gondor gets attacked by Easterlings from the east and Haradrim from the south. And the army of Gondor is forced to split into two to fight on both fronts. Now, the Easterlings were mounted on chariots, and they attacked the northern part of the army, and they won heavily. And it was a disaster for Gondor, and the king, along with his two sons, died. And the rest of the army fled into the marshes, where they were either slaughtered by the army chasing them, or they perished from the marshes.
Oh my goodness.
Many more bodies were added to the Dead Marshes total, and yet more were soon to come, because the Easterlings celebrated the victory. But at the same time, in the south, the battle between the Gondorian forces and the Haradrim had finished, and the Gondorians had been victorious, and they were currently making their way back north to try and help the other Gondor army that was fighting the Easterlings. Now, they made their way back north, and they came upon the Easterlings still celebrating, and they drove these forces into the marshes too, where they also met their doom. So now you're talking about the original War of the Last Alliance, all the dead bodies that were in there. Then the second battle, which was the Gondorians that were all killed by the Easterlings. And now all those Easterlings were killed by these Gondorians again. So you've so many different men and elves and orcs, as Gollum
says. It's the
circle
of life.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, if we had John Earl Jones to tell Simba about this story, maybe we could enjoy
or Elton more. John. Elton John to go, the circle.
Yeah, exactly.
James Earl Jones, not John Earl Jones.
Did I say John Earl Jones? Oh, my God.
I believe so.
It's been a long day. I can't even know what my own name is.
You're mixing up Elton John and James Earl Jones.
Yeah, Elton John Earl Jones. So then, we need to ask the question also, how does Gollum know all about this? Was he studying it up? Did he read the Lord of the Rings books? Did he read the War of the Ring? How did he figure it out?
Yeah. He was studying up on Middle-earth's version of War and Peace. It's true, actually, because you said one battle happened 2,000 years prior before the other. So Gollum wasn't around. He certainly wasn't around for the first battle. I'm not sure when the second battle took place in terms of Gollum's lifespan, because he is in and around 500 years old, or close to 500 years, I think. He could have seen the later battles, or could have been around skulking in Mordor at the time. But I don't know how he would have known about the first one. Or maybe he just knows about the second one.
Well, I'll get into that in a little bit more detail later on. But basically, how does Gollum know about just the Dead Marshes? Let's just look at that for a moment as well. When had Gollum ever been to the Dead Marshes before, Dave? Because obviously, he becomes Fran. Frodo and Sam. Frodo and Sam, yeah, he becomes Fran Walsh's guide. He becomes Frodo and Sam's guide through the dead marshes. So how does he know a way through the marshes? How does he know them so well?
Ah, well, Gollum's been around. I'm trying to think of when exactly. He was...
You've been there before, haven't you?
He was captured and brought to Mordor, where he was tortured. So when he eventually escaped or was let go...
set loose.
Yeah. maybe that was the path he took through the dead marshes.
Yeah. Again, 100%. Very good.
Boom.
Good job. Well done.
Is that the only time? Well, that was one that came to mind. But
I mean, he may have been there, as you said, you know, he's been around for a long time, but mainly he was kind of hiding in holes and underground and stuff. But yes, so... around, again, 1,000 years after that second battle, we catch up to the Lord of the Rings timeline. And here again, the Dead Marshes come back into play. And so Gollum, after he loses his ring, he is drawn to Mordor by the Dark Lord. And we don't know if he actually gets there through the marshes or not, but we know that when he leaves, he definitely comes via that road. And it is here that Aragorn first captures him, after seeking him for about 16 years in the wild on Gandalf's request. So Gandalf had asked Aragorn to look for Gollum, and Aragorn spent 16, almost 17 years looking for him, on and off, because a couple of things happened in the meantime, and he had to go off and bury his mother and stuff, and, you know, he had to do different bits and pieces, you know, loads of admin to do, and you know, bureaucracy and stuff. So he's like, oh, got to go, do my taxes. And
I have to pass into the land of Gondor, that, you know, I have to get my visa sorted for that.
Visa, yeah, stamp the passport. Yeah. And then about a year after this, Gollum later is back in the Dead Marshes again, and this time as the guide to Frodo and Sam. And so this is how Gollum is able to guide the hobbits to the marshes, as he spent time there before returning from Mordor, and he kind of, we don't know how long, maybe he actually like took his time coming back, and he kind of, you know, tried to find some dead bodies to eat and stuff, and things like that. So, yeah.
Is that tasty?
So that brings us on to the next thing about, I said maybe he was trying to eat some dead bodies while he's in the marshes. So we do see in the movies as well, we see that Sam says, there are dead things, dead faces in the water.
Yeah.
What's that all about? Like, who are these dead faces in the water? I mean, how could there be faces of actual people in the water?
Oh, like, how are they preserved? Well, I think in real life, doesn't bog land and marshland like that actually preserves? I know here in Ireland, we have, if you go to some of the museums, you can actually see people from back in the like plague times, totally reserved, because they would have died and fallen in a bog, and the bog would have preserved their body. So you can even see their fingernails, their hair, their skin, like their nose is still there, and all this kind of stuff, which you wouldn't normally see on an old skeleton. So that's
Dave, you're smashing it today.
I'm telling you.
I can't believe it. Are you the same person that I usually talk to? Because usually you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, well, usually I'm an idiot. Like,
you're nailing it today. Now, I mean, I think Tolkien liked his writings to be kind of a mixture of fantasy and a little bit of reality based in there as well. So I think maybe there could be a bit of that bog preservation as well.
Yeah.
But of course, who are these dead faces? They're basically spirits and fell corpses of all those who had been swallowed by the marshes, either in battles or travelers who were devoured by the marshes over time. Mm. And the question, are there still bodies in there, like actual bodies, not just spirits and whatever, ghosts and things like that? But because we know also, as I was saying before, that the bodies of the people who died there were from thousands of years before. So how could their bodies survive? And yes, you so perfectly put it, that there is such thing as bog bodies, which is when a human body is naturally mummified in a bog due to specific conditions of particular swamplands. Mm. And there are real life examples of this from between 8,000 BC up until more recent examples of bodies recovered from World War II.
Wow.
And bodies can be preserved to varying degrees, from skeletons up to perfectly preserved cadavers.
Yeah.
And they often even retain their skin and their organs. And as you said, hair and fingernails and little details like that usually wouldn't last more than a couple of weeks.
Like I definitely remember that from going to museums back in school. And I think I might have said the plague earlier, but I meant the famine, like the Irish famine. Yeah, like it was quite creepy. See, I remember quite vividly now that I'm thinking of it, seeing like a woman lying there, and she was in a pit of gravel or something, and they had preserved her again, but she had been preserved by the bog, and she was like a ginger girl. You could see her long hair, and like they had her clothes on as well, but like you could see her nose.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty creepy. Like, but and I think that might have stuck with me ever since.
Yeah, you didn't sleep for weeks.
Oh, well, I mean,
ever since you've had to sleep with a nightlight on.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that information might have stuck with me so much, or even when I first saw Lord of the Rings, I always just kind of had that in the back of my head. Like, of course, there are bodies there preserved because it's in the bog.
Yeah.
You know, this is where they're cutting turf.
So the bog's famous for.
Yeah, of course.
So I said there that maybe you had to sleep with a nightlight on, but maybe that's what all the lights were out in the in the dead marshes. Maybe these lights were little nightlights that people were like, I don't like the dark, I need to turn on my nightlight because I'm too afraid of all these dead bodies. But let's look at that now, because of course we know that Gollum says, don't follow the lights. Or how does Gollum say it, Dave, in your Gollum?
Follow the lights.
Lovely, love it. Great. So he says, "Don't follow the lights," of course. And so, why the hell are there lights there? And he says that people, the hobbits, will go down and light little candles of their own, and all this kind of crazy lights kind of stuff going on. So, and obviously, we saw in the movies there was loads of lights just like around the place. So, what is all that about? Now, in order to explain this, I want to go away from Lord of the Rings a little bit and talk about something else just for a couple of moments, which is called Will of the Wisps, or Will of the Wisps, if I am to put it with the O apostrophe instead of the of. Will of the Wisps. Now, have you ever heard of Will of the Wisps, Dave? Do you know anything what that is?
Don't think so. It sounds familiar, but maybe I'm just thinking of Wind in the Willows.
Wind in the Willows and things like that. Now, so Will of the Wisps is kind of an old British and Irish folklore about a guy named Will who was given a second chance to get into heaven by Saint Peter. But because of the terrible life that he lives, he's not allowed in, and he is doomed to walk the earth for eternity, carrying only a small ember in his hand for warmth. Will then uses this ember to lure people to their own doom in swamps. And that's just very naughty, carry on. You can't be doing that. So it's kind of like a freaky story. It's a little kind of almost like a bedtime story for children to scare them into going to sleep or something. So,
like hearing of banshees and such.
Exactly. Banshees, or maybe even mermaids for people that are out in boats.
Sailors,
yeah. I was like, what are those people on boats called again?
Boatmen.
I was like, pirates, I mean, no.
Seamen.
Yeah. So, now also, interestingly, this story, sometimes the name to the main character, instead of Will, is called Jack. And that gives rise to the name.
Oh, Jack-o'-lantern.
Jack-o'-lantern, exactly. Ah. Very, very good. So, there you go. That's kind of a cool thing as well. Also, this story pops up in many, many places. I'm just telling you the version that we have here in the British Isles. But it's not only even in Europe. It seems that cultures from all over the world seem to have some sort of legend about seeing these fire floaty things in the dark that call to people and lure them to their death. So why do all these cultures have this same thing? Well, the answer is because this phenomenon is real. Banshee are real. And we'll leave it there, folks. We'll catch up next week.
And that seems like a good place to wrap this episode up.
Exactly. So what the hell is actually going on? And it's science. So if I read a little excerpt from Wikipedia on this Will of the Willows, not Will of the Willows.
Will of the Wills?
Will of the Wisps.
Will of the Wisps.
It says here, in urban legends, folklore, and superstitions, Will-o'-the-Wisps are typically attributed to ghosts, fairies, or elemental spirits. Modern science explains them as natural phenomena, such as bioluminescence or chemiluminescence, caused by the oxidation of phosphine, diphosphine, and methane produced by organic decay. Now, what the hell is that all about? So basically, marshes are known to naturally produce swamp gases through rotting vegetation. And these gases basically combine in the air and ignite, causing a flicker of light. So people have often spotted this flame or this light in the distance in a swampy area and have naturally thought that must be a ghost.
You son of a bitch!
No, that wasn't me! That was a spooky ghost! Did you see the ghost?
Now, of course, many people then would have gone out to try and see what was going on, and they've tried to chase after these lights in the dark in swamps and marshes, and of course that may have led to their death, because, and remember, swamps are bad.
My goodness.
Now, this only extends their legend of these will-o'-the-wisps and ghostly fairies that lead you to your doom, I suppose, because the amount of people that probably go out to try and investigate what's going on, and then suddenly it's the middle of the night and they're in the middle of a swamp, and again, they die. And
yeah.
So kind of a crazy thing, but that's a real life thing that is actually, that actually happens in swamplands. Now, in the book, The War of the Ring, a rough draft describes the dead marshes, and it says, "The pools lit by will-o'-the-wisp fire reveal dead faces." And Christopher Tolkien added a footnote here saying, "This was no doubt the point at which the idea of the marsh lights entered." Brackets, will-o'-the-wisp, comma, jack-o'-lantern, close brackets. In The Two Towers, Gollum calls them candles of corpses. Corpse candle is defined in the Oxford Dictionary as a lambent flame seen in a churchyard or over a grave and superstitiously believed to appear as an omen of death.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Obviously, Tolkien wanted to bring a, we know that Tolkien got like his ideas from different areas, like you know, old Saxon folklore and different things like this. So obviously he likes this idea of the Byzantines. And have you seen the movie Brave, the cartoon Brave?
The Disney? No, I haven't. I know it's about a Scottish archer, but that's fair.
Yeah, and if any of our listeners have seen it, there is a part, or there's a few parts in the movie that these kind of little sort of blue flamey things just sort of appear, and the main character, she's like chasing after these blue flames that are out in the, and usually it ends up being like a terrible situation, what happens afterwards. But it's kind of like that, these sort of little blue flames that you see in the distance. And I think Tolkien really liked the idea of this sort of little flicker of flame that you could see out in the distance, that basically ultimately kind of lured you. You were just drawn to go to it, and then it basically usually led to death in some sort of way. Cool. So
he must have watched Brave as well. So
he must have watched Brave. Yeah. Definitely.
Brave man.
Now, in the book, Gollum knows not to follow the lights because he tried to reach out and touch them on his original journey through the marshes and was unable to. So if I read a quote from that scene in the book, "The dead marshes, yes, yes, that is their name," he cackled. "You should not look in when the candles are lit." "Who are they? What are they?" asked Sam, shuddering, turning to Frodo, who was now behind him. Frodo hid his eyes in his hands. "I know not who they are, but I thought I saw there men and elves and orcs beside them." "Yes, yes," said Gollum. "All dead, all rotten. Elves and men and orcs. The dead marshes. There was a great battle long ago. So they told him when Sméagol was young. When I was young before the precious came. It was a great battle. Tall men with long swords and terrible elves and orcs shrieking. They fought on the plain for days and months at the Black Gate. But the marshes have grown since then. Swallowed up the graves. Always creeping, creeping." "But that is an age and more ago," said Sam. "The dead can't be really there. Is it some devilry hatched in the dark land?" "Who knows?" "Sméagol doesn't know," answered Gollum. "You cannot reach them. You cannot touch them. We tried once. Yes, precious, I tried once. But you cannot reach them. Only shapes to see, perhaps, not to touch. No, precious, all dead." Sam looked darkly at him and shuddered again, thinking that he guessed why Sméagol had tried to touch them. "Yes, yes," said Gollum, "but slowly, very slowly. Very carefully, or hobbits go down to join the dead ones and light little candles."
Ugh. Was he trying to eat them?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Gross.
Yeah, so we can assume, I mean, classic Gollum trying to eat these dead, like, He already knows these bodies have been here for thousands of years. And he's like, I wonder what they taste like.
Is it tasty? We talked about it in our Gollum debate a while ago, how you were supporting the fact that Gollum is kind of childlike, and he really is like that. He's like, oh, look at this thing. I just want to put it in my mouth.
Exactly. Like, he's like a child, or like a wild animal. Like, I mean, a wild animal could just stumble upon, like, you know, a turd and be like, I'm going to have a go at this, see if it's tasty. And,
I saw this funny meme the last day. It just reminded me of that. It was a dog sitting in a bath and he's about to light a candle. And then the next picture zooms in on the candle fragrance and it just says, dog's butthole.
The dogs, they have it all figured out. I mean,
yeah.
Did you find out where they sell that? Because I'd be interested in getting my hands on that.
I mean, I don't know. Do you know Gwyneth Paltrow, random fact, has she sells candles and she has a fragrance of candle called My Vagina. And I think it's just like the smell of her own vagina. Before. Yeah. And it's like massively popular.
Pretty wild. Yeah. I mean, yeah, celebrities, what they get up to these days. I know. It's kind of like a fad now as well that celebrities just don't wash, or they don't bathe their children and stuff. And there's some...
Oh God, I hope she washes, because I don't want to smell that.
I think it's like... I'm pretty sure it's like Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis that have just said that they don't wash their children. They just let them be or something like that. Like, yeah, I think it's like, I mean, you should look into this because I could be definitely just like defaming these people with absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. So
either they're going to be cancelled or we're going to be cancelled. But
but it's going to be them.
One or the other. Yeah. Well, I don't wash either. Do you ever hear Dermot and Dave talking about how Dave doesn't wash his legs?
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
I just let the shower wash me.
Yeah, he's like, I wash my upper body and just let the soap and water drip down to my legs.
I mean, he's got a point. Like,
I mean, I don't really wash my legs unless I've played football or something and they're like particularly sweaty or something. I'm like, okay, I need to actually go down and do some leg scrubbing. But like, I mean, it's not like an everyday.
Whenever you reach down that far, the water gets cold. So I don't want to go down there.
I'm also afraid of like bending down and slipping and cracking my head.
Yeah. In our shower, we have like a handle that sticks out as well. It's made of metal. I'm always thinking like, if I trip, that thing's killing me and no one's going to come rescue me.
Yeah, I think it's there so that you don't trip. You're supposed to hold onto it, you know?
No, it's like the door handle.
Oh, right. Yeah, God.
I'm not some like 90-year-old woman that needs to have a handle getting in the shower.
Do you have a seat in there as well?
Oh, well, you have to sit down when you're having a shower. It's called the toilet. We're going off track here.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Lord of the Rings. I want to just quickly, very quickly, talk about the inspiration Tolkien may have got for the Dead Marshes. So Tolkien expressed in a letter, in letter 226, that he was probably inspired for the marshes by the Battle of the Somme in World War I. The rain turned the area into a muddy wasteland, and water pools gathered in craters. And it's possible that dead bodies could have been seen in these pools. Now, Tolkien doesn't go into much more detail regarding this inspiration, but you could definitely imagine how after this experience in the trenches with mud and watery sludge and dead bodies, that this could be where he thought up these marshy swamplands as far as the eye could see, filled with watery greys where bodies and spirits still dwell. So I thought that was kind of cool as well, and it definitely makes sense.
Yeah, sick. Tolkien was actually there in the Battle of the Somme, right?
Yeah,
I know. Exactly. Sorry, when we were talking about it there, I kind of just forgot. I always kind of associate that as history, but like, yeah, he was there. So he had firsthand like comparisons with it. So
he was living the history.
He was living it, man. That actually reminds me as well when we were talking about it before in our Parallels episode from a while ago. There was a direct quote that linked the Dead Marshes to the World War I trenches, which was almost impossible to traverse and haunted by lingering faces in the gloom. So I think that was another like direct parallel that Tolkien basically had from his experience in the Battle of the Somme. And
that's class.
I think that is pretty cool, but.
Yeah, I like the more I think about it, I'm just like thinking definitely that's it must be the inspiration, because you think of this huge, like, wasteland, marshy swamp area, which is just famous for death and famous for being impossible to traverse. And and just having this kind of, you know, I said earlier on that it was famous for just having this kind of misty kind of clouds lying on top of it and stuff like that, and having a horrible smell.
Yeah.
So all of that can give me, like, even watching the movie Tolkien as well, where we see like they have their own depiction of the Somme, the Battle of the Somme as well. And as I said, watching recently that movie on Hacksaw Ridge, where you see a battlefield and the destruction and the mayhem that's caused there. It kind of seems like that kind of a wasteland of the Dead Marshes. So
yeah, and especially when you were talking about how, like, they, you know, each day was like you fight, you win, you go on, and then, like, the next day you fight, you lose, you have to retreat, and then you're coming over, like, the bodies of your comrades, basically. Yes, pretty grim.
Yeah,
pretty grim indeed.
The Dead Marshes, pretty cool area. Pretty
highly recommend.
Pretty eerie, yeah.
10 out of 10 would visit again.
TripAdvisor, 5 stars.
Yeah. Would not swim in the water.
Yeah. Lovely place to stop for lunch. Mm. Just stick your hand into the water and grab one of the dead bodies.
Just don't follow the lights.
Do not follow the lights, exactly. Gollum should be on TripAdvisor's advertisement boards here. Just saying, don't follow the lights.
Don't follow the lights.
And then I just, one thing as well, I saw somebody with a theory online saying basically that they thought maybe Sauron or one of his servants, maybe like the Witch King, for example, could have summoned ghosts into the Dead Marshes as a line of defense. Ghosts could be similar to like the Barrow Wights or something like that. So what do you think of that kind of a theory?
That he might have summoned them into the marshes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like as in when, like, we know that as, again, where are we, if we're looking at the map, we've got Mordor, and then just kind of to the north of Mordor, right, like right on the border, we've got this huge marshland, which makes it difficult to get to Mordor. But then even more difficult if you're trying to get through these marshlands and you've got these like ghostly spirits that are trying to kill you and eat you. That's even, like, you know, going to make it more difficult to get into Mordor. So the theory was that maybe Sauron or the Witch King or someone like that may have summoned these spirits, like Barrow White type spirits. Remember, Barrow Whites are kind of like the Nazgul. Could have summoned these types of spirits and put them into the marshes as well, into the Dead Marshes.
Yeah, like kind of summon them out of the bodies that are already there, that kind of way.
Well, I mean, we've already given the theories of that, the fact that these spirits that are in the waters are from these bodies. But, I mean, there could be another theory that these spirits are just there separate to all the dead bodies that are there as well. But
yeah,
just,
like, I think it's
almost like the army of the dead that are in the mountains.
Yeah.
Like, there could be an army of the dead in the Dead Marshes kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think the way the movie portrays it, it kind of feels like there is an army of the dead in the marshes, but it's almost like they're not strong enough to, like, take physical form but take a form outside of the marshes, where Frodo actually falls in, and that's when he's vulnerable, is because he's in the water, he's like in their kingdom now, and basically they can't come out and like attack you, they can't pull you in. Well, maybe they can draw you in or lure you in, which they kind of do with their candles and whatnot.
Kind of like Sauron trying to grab Frodo whenever he puts on the ring.
Yeah,
that it's like he puts on the ring and suddenly the eye kind of sees him, and it's kind of like he almost feels like he's getting dragged into the big, huge eye. And then as soon as he pulls off the ring, it's like, oh, I'm out, I'm safe.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like once you're out of the water, you're away from the danger.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's cool to kind of, I don't know, muse on these things and speculate as to how those spirits got in the water in the first place. But that's for all of you guys at home to debate and to let us know in the comments as well. Give us your theories if you've heard of any other theories, or if you've just made up theories on your own. And we'd love to hear those. So please get in touch.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about that. I do think the way we talked about, or the way you've described the kind of Will of the Wisps and the jack-o'-lanterns, and the way that kind of is a real phenomena. It almost seems like maybe Peter Jackson didn't capture exactly the way Tolkien was thinking of it. He actually had like lit candles around. Now, I like the way it's done in the movies, but maybe Tolkien was going for more of a, you don't really see them up close. It's not like a physical burning fire here. It's more of like just like flashes of light or in the distance that you're kind of trying to chase. But it is cool that maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say Peter got it wrong, but like maybe he didn't realize exactly what he was going for or what that was.
Well, maybe he did, and this is just like, maybe he was trying to give his own interpretation, which was based more in, this is just an actual physical lamp that, like, it's also, like, I mean, when I saw the movies, it was also a cool idea where the dead go down and then they light a candle.
That's what I kind of thought.
Just imagine this kind of ghostly candle just kind of coming up out of the water and they're just, like, staying there in place. It's, like, it's kind of horrifying as well, so.
It is, and that seems more like a religious kind of look at it. Like, you talked about how candles lit on people's graves and stuff is kind of, what did we say? That is,
Well, it was just a sign. It was like an omen of death.
And that's kind of, I guess I never thought about it too much, but just seeing a candle lit there, it is kind of spooky because it's unnatural. And you think, well, maybe that is a dead person lighting their candle or like claiming the spot where they have died. And maybe that was kind of the direction that Jackson was going for there. So
they're just down there having a smoke. They're like, so bored. Like, I've been dead for years. Just, you know, have a little...
Yeah, man, do you have a light?
Yeah, sure, man. I just keep mine lit here for eternity. So anytime I need smoke, I have my flame there. Spark off that.
It is lit.
The beacons of Minas Tirith! The beacons are lit!
Well, that's it for another episode here on the Council of Elrond. Thank you so much for listening, and hopefully you've come away knowing a bit more about this horrid wasteland. As always, we would be delighted if you got in touch with us to say hello or to give us some suggestions on what you would like to hear us discuss on this weekly podcast. You can find the links to all our social media in the podcast info section, along with our Buy Me a Coffee account, where you can also sponsor the podcast by donating the price of a cup of coffee. We really hope you're enjoying this journey with us and that you'll continue to tune in each week. And don't forget to tell your friends about this podcast. If you want to share it on social media, be sure to tag us and we will share and retweet all of your messages on our own socials. Thanks so much, guys, and on behalf of the Melonheads, hail the victorious dead.